Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Corn picked up a nickel on the week and soybeans rallied 14 cents. What should farmers do with the crop still in the bin from last year? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Doug Yoder, Risk Management Specialist from the Illinois Farm Bureau. Our panelists today are Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities out of Champaign, Illinois, along with Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain in Windsor, Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open with this discussion, and we'll start with you, Matt. Were you impressed with the weekly closes in the corn pit after last week's big numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture?
Yeah, definitely I was impressed. We talked about this a little before the show, and I've talked with a couple of people about this since the close today. I was kind of waiting around to see what the close was going to be, but you know, we closed higher on the week this week, and last week we added 2.5 million acres to our corn crop nationwide, so I think that's a pretty strong showing that the corn market isn't quite dead just yet. There's still enough uncertainty about the corn crop that we're not going to hammer it in the ground yet.
Clayton Pope, the corn market's not dead yet?
No, I'd say it's not dead. I certainly think we're going to have a hard time having a significant rally at this point unless the weather really comes out blazing, you know, next week. But, yeah, it's hung in there real well this last week. But I think the beans are kind of in the leadership position now and keep a close eye on the weather.
And Mike Zuzulo.
Yeah, probably three things we took away from the trade this past week. The trade does see a big crop in corn, but it's not in the bin, and they respect that at this point. Beans, the numbers say there's no carryover threat, but trade wants acres up in Brazil, so the trade and the currencies are working in the favor of the beans especially. And wheat, it was probably the best thing for us from our analysis, Todd. The world supplies seem to be continuing to fall. We're done with U.S. harvest, yet July futures is back up above $6 as it gets ready to expire next week.
Corn finished the week like this in Chicago. July had a high of $3.37.5, a low at $3.17.25. On the composite trade, week to week, $3.34.5. The settlement price, they were up a nickel from last Friday. And December corn up a penny and a quarter at $3.52. We'll pick up the wheat and the soybeans as well. July in the wheat pit at $6.50 on their high, the low at $5.62.5. And the settlement price at $6.50, up 18.5 cents. December futures at $6.22.5 were up 12.5. And from the bean pit nearby, July futures, $8.71.25, the high, the low at $8.49.25. Their settlement price, 14.75 cents higher at $8.64 for the July-November, your harvest month, at $8.96. And their weekly close, 14.25 cents higher from last Friday's trade. You know, the trade in Chicago simply dismissed a few numbers this week on Friday that were released from Informa Soybeans. From Informa's point of view, at 43 bushels to the acre, USDA at 41.5, the corn at 156.6 bushels to the acre, and they're expecting a 13.3 billion bushel corn crop. In your opinion, was it a wise choice on Friday after the 4th of July to simply dismiss those Informa numbers, or were they already built into the marketplace?
I think they're largely built into the marketplace. I mean, it's a huge number, 156.6, but I think the market has been trading a minimum of 153 or 154, and there's certainly been a lot of whisper numbers bigger than that. So, again, we're obviously in a critical point right now in the stuff, but it seems like the trade recognizes that it's a big number. The bean number, I think everybody takes that with a grain of salt just because it is so preliminary. as far as the development of the bean plant and all. But I think if you try to draw a correlation with crop conditions at the current time, I think most people would probably spit out even a bigger yield number than that, although fully recognizing anything can happen at this point.
Is that right, all these numbers already built into the marketplace, you think?
Oh, probably partially. I guess the beans, I think Clayton's right on the money on that, because we see the exact same thing. The fundamentals, it's really not been about the fundamentals as far as the supply and demand, ending stocks, carryover yield. It's been more about acres and what happens if we have a problem. We just don't have any room to have a problem this year. And the trade continues with that mindset. But the corn, if you want to go into a 1.9, 2 billion bushel carryover mindset, and the wheat has topped and the beans have topped, and then the corn probably has additional downside, maybe all the way down to 315 or 310 going into harvest. But again, it goes back to 2 weeks from now. If the trade that's trading 156 to 157 bushels per acre on corn is using crop conditions and we don't have good weather for the next 2 weeks, then they're going to have to eat their own crop conditions if they start going down and say, gee, we're not 156 anymore. We're back towards 153 or 152 or 151. That's probably the biggest problem we see right now with how the trade is trying to price the futures using the crop conditions report this early.
Well, how do you adjust your bottom side down? What'd you say, 315, I think, potentially on the corn? How do you adjust the bottom side as the crop conditions change or what futures are looking like in Chicago?
We don't. We usually adjust our bottom size based upon demand and the world-ending stocks. And if we see the Ukraine and we see Eastern Europe continue with a poor maize crop and we see China not raising their corn crop, it's something else that happened this week that the trade didn't like to see early on. But if we see the demand stay strong like we did with the export sales this week and the ethanol break-even stay very, very healthy, we won't adjust based upon the U.S. and the crop conditions as much.
Matt, two questions for you. Is the Bennett Farm going to be able to support the 156.6? I'm going to assume you're well above that, but are you going to be able to put a yield in that's going to make that work nationally?
Well, you know, we went out and looked at our corn a little bit this week, and where I was thinking that our heat and our dryness early on probably hurt us whenever we were setting the ear size, I'm not seeing that so much right now. I think that there's areas where that is the case. On my particular farm, I'm feeling pretty darn good about my prospects right now. Plus, we're saturated, and it's the first week of July, and I don't know how, you know, I've only been farming 10, 12 years, and this is the first time, I guess, I've had this kind of moisture at this stage of the game. Now, I know it can dry out and it can get hot from here on out, but I'm feeling pretty good about my crop right now.
And then take off the farmer hat and put on the businessman hat for the brokerage in the elevator, and then talk about this 310, 315 that Mike's discussing. Are you as bearish as that?
Well, I think the interesting thing for me, if you want to talk about the elevator standpoint and what I talk about with my clients,
sure,
is, you know, granted, yeah, I think there could be some downside with that kind of yield production potential. But the thing to note for me is that we have a 24-cent carry from fall to Jan right now. I think that we're already starting to see that the trade is expecting to have a decent-sized crop. And if we do, basis, as we talked about last week, basis could go to pot. I mean, it could really... we could have some pretty wide basis levels. And, you know, I think that guys right now I'm talking to, I say, hey, if you've got bin space, take that quarter. If you're going to sell, take the quarter and carry it to Jan. And I think that that's very interesting to talk about what basis levels could be like if we end up with a 155, 160 crop. I think regionally you're going to have a hard time finding storage.
You know, on the 29th, USDA released not only the crop production numbers, but also numbers on genetically engineered crops. Beans are pretty simple. 91% planted this season, herbicide tolerant. That compares to 89% last year, 54%, by the way, at the turn of the century or year 2000. Corn, a different story that may play out uniquely should adverse weather conditions come to portions of the Midwest. This year, 73% of the corn planted was genetically engineered in one form or another. Let's go a bit further. Iowa, that number at 78%. Illinois at 74%. Nebraska, 79%. And Minnesota at 89%. Indiana, the low one on this poll at 59%. Those are the five top corn-producing states in order: Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Indiana. By the way, South Dakota leads the adoption of genetically engineered corn at 93%. Ohio in the last spot at 41% of all of the national state averages. It seems Informa may think these numbers or the current weather conditions, one of the two, will make a difference in total yield by the harvest season. Do you think the BT and the herbicide resistance is planted on enough acres that it needs to be counted in your marketing plan?
Oh, I think so, definitely. And I think it's already in people's marketing plan, just in the sense that it's no question it's factored into these various yield projections that you hear, such as the ones released Friday, and obviously USDA's when we start getting those and that kind of thing. So I think you have to consider that. And going back to what you were talking about a minute ago, I think as far as the bottom on this thing, I think it all is about the carryover. And if you know, 155 to 160 type yield, like Matt suggested, was possible, you know, if we got a carryover of 1.7 plus, boy, I think there could still be a real train wreck on this if that does come about.
Whenever we talk about yield, I've been talking for quite a while about interesting tug of war, in that we have significantly more corn on corn acres this year and a significant amount of acres in fringe areas that aren't necessarily thought of as being big income producers for corn. On the other side of that, nationwide, we're planting a lot of genetically modified crops, you know, with corn. And so, to me, I don't know how that's going to all play out, but I think that the GMO definitely would help. And I think that if you were planting the exact same type of acreage, you would have to tack on maybe 15, 20 bushel. But that's not the case. So, you know, what do we end up with as far as what we're going to push our yield because of GMOs? It's a combination of factors based upon what kind of acreage we're planting those to.
At the top, I told you that we'd take up old crop just a bit and what producers might want to do with that. I want to take that into context of the end of the marketing season. As we roll through July and August, usually there's a pretty good sized drop in the marketplace once we get into those months. It seems to me that basis may be under a lot more pressure if there's a lot of corn in the South. We know there is, from Cairo to Memphis, and that'll probably go into the export market, may hold basis down there. What do producers do with their old crop that's sitting in the bin that they may or may not want to get rid of? If they don't want to get rid of it, should they hold it, or is it time to go ahead and pull the trigger?
I think the mindset should be, let's dump a little bit each week between now and the middle of August, whether it goes up or goes down, because you've got on your side to go higher the continued weather problems. But if that weather breaks and it doesn't get as hot in 10 days in Minnesota and Iowa and the Dakotas as they project it could get on the weather models, then there's no reason to hold on from a futures perspective, you know, and that's where it goes back to maybe your basis isn't going to erode that much on old crop, but why hold on anymore with the futures? So my mindset is scale and sell here the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, I'd agree. I've been talking here lately that if the trade thinks the corn market's made, then it could be several months before the corn market comes back to you. And I think that as far as your cash goes, you know, if anything, I would try to sell it, you know, within the next 2 weeks. I think this next week is going to be a big week, because if we come in Sunday night with hot and dry and we remain hot and dry, then, yeah, you could tack some money back onto the corn market. But I just, you know, as you said, once you get close to the crop, especially with a big crop looming, which it appears that even if it's not a perfect crop with this amount of acreage, there's going to be enough corn out there. I think that basis levels are going to fall. So I would be wanting to sell before too long with any old crop.
In the wheat, an 18.5 cent gain settled up on its high for the week at $6.5. That's pretty rarefied in the wheat market. It's an awfully good number. What do you think when you're looking at that kind of number for wheat? Is it time to go ahead and make sales of the crop you've just harvested?
I think it is, absolutely. Friday was kind of an interesting day. It seems like if you tried to look for a fundamental development to explain the sudden surge on Friday, I think it would be the forecast rain in the plains returning to possibly hamper harvest there again. But on the other hand, Kansas City kind of sat out that last little pop, and that was one that probably should have been the most affected. So I think that run-up Friday was more a fun play than anything. And personally, at these levels here, I'd find it very hard to justify hanging on to any wheat at this point. I wouldn't look this gift horse in the mouth, and I'd send it on its way.
I think Clayton had a real good point about Kansas City, and it made us turn our attention back over to Europe. We have a contact in France that we talked to this week before the holiday, and you know, France is probably about a third or 25% of the whole EU major EU state production in wheat, and they're running at about a 35 million metric ton projection right now, but they're going to lower that in the next couple of weeks if they don't dry out in France. And then you have the exact opposite extreme in Eastern Europe, where you've got countries like the Ukraine and Bulgaria and places you visited, Todd, not too long ago. They've been under drought, and they're looking at lowering the Bulgarian crop the Bulgarian crop, a couple 3 million metric tons here in a couple weeks if they don't get some rains. And so it seemed like to us, like at the top of the show, we said it maybe went back to a world-type crop and world-type pricing structure led by the Egyptians coming in, you know, during our holiday this week and purchasing some wheat.
Wrapping up the numbers from Chicago now, July oats in Chicago at the Board of Trade at 284 on the end of the week at 5.5 cents higher. Over at the Mercantile Exchange, August live cattle at 92.75 on their high, the low at 89.45. And their settlement, the new lead after the June expired, they're up $7 at $92.50. August feeder cattle at $114.70, up $3.15. Lean hogs, July's at $72.60 on the high, the low at $70.25. Settlement price there at $71.32.5. They were up a dime from last week, and the bellies were down $3.92 at $88.52.5. When we return, we'll talk with Doug Yoder.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. After a wet end to June across most of Illinois, July got off to a quiet start in most areas. However, it didn't last long. Rainfall this week was well above normal in northern Illinois and in southwestern Illinois. A slow-moving, weak cold front provided the mechanism to trigger scattered heavy thunderstorms across the state. Heavy storms occurred in northwestern Illinois, where more than 5 inches of rain fell in Moline late on July 3rd and early in the morning on July 4th. Late on July 4th and early on July 5th, heavy thunderstorms continued to develop over southwestern Illinois, dumping 6.75 to 7.5 inches of rain on Chester in Randolph County. A few locations in central Illinois received a good rain on July 4th and 5th, but they were the exception and not the rule. Temperatures this week averaged about 3 to 4 degrees below normal. More humid and warmer air began to return to Illinois on the 4th of July, but temperatures at that point only returned to near normal levels. Next week's weather across Illinois and the Midwest should be similar to this week. Warm and humid weather will start the week. Then another cold front pushing south through Illinois about midweek will bring a chance for showers and thunderstorms, followed by a turn to cooler and less humid weather by the end of the week. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week on WILL Urbana. Our panelists in studio today are Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities out of Champaign, Illinois, Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain out of Windsor, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Doug Yoder of the Illinois Farm Bureau is our guest today. Yoder is responsible for developing professional education classes for farmers. He teaches a wide variety of agricultural marketing, risk management, crop insurance, government farm policy, and e-commerce classes. He's also responsible for relationships with various commodity research and agricultural food organizations, including the U of I, which reminds me that there's a financial management seminar coming up that Doug, who happens to be an Ag Econ alum from the U of I, will be participating in. Doug, why don't you lay out some of the summer sessions you'll be attending, and that'll give us a good idea of how wide-ranging our questions can be as we get into that through this portion of Commodity Week.
All right, I'd be glad to. We've got a full-packed summer ahead of us. I guess if I do it by calendar order, the first one up is our annual commodity conference. That's going to be July 31st at the Crown Plaza in Springfield. That's a full-day session with 3 keynote speakers and 15 breakout sessions. Producers can choose which ones they want to attend. And next one, then, I'll be more than glad to get in more specifics of these as well, Todd, if you'd like. But the next conference on the agenda then is our Midwest Agricultural Transportation Conference. That's going to be August 8th and 9th up near Chicago, Illinois, in Naperville, actually. That's the first of its kind that we're hosting. We're bringing in speakers from all over the country. That's a day and a half conference taking a good in-depth overall look at everything related to agricultural transportation, rail, truck, barge, you name it, ocean going, everything, taking a look at obviously how dependent our entire industry is on transportation, especially as we transition into this biofuels era. We want to make sure that we're doing all we can to ensure that the transportation system is everything it needs to be to ensure our products, our crops, and our products get to market in a timely fashion. And then the last one, the one that you already mentioned, on August 13th, we're hosting a financial management seminar in conjunction with the University of Illinois. We'll be held at the Tony Knoll Center in Parkland. It's a day-long agenda. Again, taking a look at, obviously $4 corn, $9 soybeans has a big impact on farmers' bottom line, changes their numbers dramatically. So we're going to take a good long look that day at everything related to that, how they account for it, investments, what they want to do with their lenders differently, things like that.
I want to go back to a question that I asked the panelist earlier about the genetically engineered crops. How important is it to the total of the marketplace? How much difference do you think it will make in national yield? And have you been working it in some form into the marketing plans of producers?
Well, I heard that question earlier, Todd. I guess my first thought was when I heard you ask that was, yes, I agree with how Clayton answered that as well. I think it does need to go into a marketing plan, if nothing more than simply because depending on which variety they're growing, it may or may not be allowed into their normal marketing channels, which means that they have to segregate it or they have to keep it separately. They may have to account for that differently in their marketing plan. In other words, do they have storage on farm to keep it separate, or if they have to take it to town, then, of course, they better account for that. And, yes, I think it's definitely impacting our national scene more and more, obviously, as the acres continue to increase rapidly. And I think there's no doubt in my mind that's led to or certainly contributed to some of the decent yields, good yields we've seen the last couple of years when weather conditions weren't always everything we thought they would be. We still come up with a better crop than we anticipated.
Doug, given that, were you surprised today with the 156.6 that Informa came out with, and what kind of a number would you be using based upon, whether even base it on crop conditions, but based upon what you know about our crop at this point and what acreage we do have planted to corn, what kind of a national yield would you be looking at?
Well, I got to admit, I won't be able to give you a number. We haven't done any statistical analysis, so we leave that up to the experts that are very good at that, but put it this way, talking to Illinois farmers and also talking to my counterparts across the Midwest, across the Corn Belt, I certainly can't argue with a very optimistic outlook on both corn and beans right now. There's pockets that are too dry. There's pockets that are too wet. But as we always know, that axiom, you need to drown out a little bit. That means the other 90% of the crop is in excellent shape. And as of now, I got to admit that what I'm hearing is very optimistic.
Doug, you remember, I think it was very end of January, when we had the Ag Outlook meetings in Washington, and they came out with those pro forma supply-demand tables going out 7 or 8 years. And the carryovers, as far as the eye could see, was something like 500 to 750 million bushels, something like that. And it seemed at that point, especially a month ago, that we were on the era of a new price and all that kind of thing. Now, if all of a sudden we return to a 1.75 billion bushel carryover or something like that, and these corn were to approach $3, maybe even go below it, I mean, is that new era over, do you think? I mean, is it more like the more things change, the more they stay the same, or do you think that those tight carryovers are still a very real possibility?
I think I'll add one other item into that, Clayton, that I think to me indicates that I'm certainly not willing to say at this point that the new era is over. I think we could still very likely look back on this several years from now and say, yeah, we definitely have transitioned. If we're talking about bottoming out anywhere near $3, in my mind, yeah, that's certainly a different era than what we're used to. And the other aspect is the inflow of index fund money into this market. Yes, it looks like we're going to meet our need this year. We're going to have increased acres. We're going to have decent weather and a good crop building that carry out. But I think the investors are savvy enough to realize that we're one blip away from possibly serious problems. And even though I think we skirted around that potential problem this year, I think they're going to be keyed on that here for the next several years. And I guess one reason I say that, even after the ample rainfall we've had now, if you look at it, D's of 08, D's of 09, and D's of 010, you can sell $4 corn, each of those, for the next 3 years already. So I think that investment money is going to help keep us at a lot higher levels, even when we do bottom out, than what we're used to.
So, Doug, following with that, what's the political lay of the landscape? Are you worried at all that the energy policy, the biofuel craze, is going to get hampered or shut down or slowed down with the 08 elections? Or, can you give us any input or insight from what's going on from Chicago over to Washington and how you're looking at that right now?
Definitely something we need to keep in mind. Obviously, this administration has been pro-biofuels and continues to be, and anytime you switch administration, then any of our policies, obviously, we have to worry about. As of now, though, I think there's good support support, not only in the administration, but also in the congressional ranks as well. And the way this thing is off and running, I'd be very surprised if someone new coming in is able to curtail it significantly. But yes, we've certainly heard the fear about the food versus fuel argument and concerns, and depending on who does come into the next administration, that is certainly something to worry about. But I do believe that the groundwork has been laid and it continues being laid, and that's partly why we're hosting this Midwest Agricultural Transportation Conference. I think transportation is key to all that. Getting our ethanol or biodiesel supplies to the needed markets is going to be critical, and this is a brand new industry, so to speak, that we're ramping up very rapidly, and we just want to make sure we don't have any bottlenecks along the way.
How are you going to solve that problem? What do you think the problems are? Is it simply that we can't put it through the pipeline, or we've got enough rail cars? What's the deal?
Yes, on both of those. We're inviting the big boys, the big railroads are going to be in attendance to talk about their plans to gear up. Obviously, agriculture with railroads, we're more cyclical. We need them badly for a short period of time. And then throughout the rest of the year, we certainly need them, but not near as much as we do at crunch time. Well, we're starting to change that. If we're going to, if ethanol plants are going to grind corn 24/7 year round, they're going to need more reliable, consistent rail supplies of outbound capacity. So obviously we're looking at some new environments here with transportation, not only with ethanol but also DDGs. What do we do with that? We're going to take a good hard look at that at both our commodity conference and the transportation conference.
And we're at the end of the time. I do have one question for you, final. On the crop insurance, if we're thinking about a 3 or 315 bottom on the corn, what are the considerations producers ought to take into account at this point?
Well, I got to admit, I was very happy with, still haven't seen the final sign-ups as far as what percentage farmers took this year, but I think farmers realized this year anyway that with the higher prices, they have a much more valuable crop to insure. When you look at the bottom lines and the values, the revenues they're able to insure per acre, it's a lot different than what we're used to. And I think they can. It just makes more sense to me to if you have a more valuable product that you do want to make sure that you are insured. And I think farmers stepped up nicely this year, and I guess I would anticipate doing so. And I do know there's some talk, some potential proposals coming out of Congress in the new farm bill that will possibly affect crop insurance. We're certainly going to have to keep our eyes on that very closely.
Doug, we appreciate you being with us.
Anytime.
Doug Yoder is with the Illinois Farm Bureau. Just enough time for a final word from our panelists. We'll start with you, Matt.
Yeah, if your production concerns have been alleviated a little bit, sell a little bit of corn and be prepared for some pretty wild basis fluctuations and weakness this fall.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Grain. Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities.
I think the break we've seen in corn illustrates the point that you just have to draw a line in the sand and be disciplined. We've already dropped a dollar from the highs in corn. If you're still holding old crop corn, maybe we'll get some strength next week, but you definitely have got to define a breaking point out there at which point you're willing to part with it.
And Mike Zuzlow.
We stepped in and recommended reowning some lower-level bean sales this past week, wanting beans to break out this coming week. We'd like to see that immediately. However, a close back below those old contract lows of 843 would strongly suggest a technical top is in place.
And that's this week's edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature,